By George, the dream is alive.
By George and Giant Killer present the Ryan and Dom cast with your hosts, Ryan Salick and Dominic Allegra.
The ball gets away. We are headed to... Oh, no!
What up, y'all? It's the Ryan and Dom cast.
Whoop, whoop.
We got Ryan here and Dom on the other mic.
What's up?
We're going to bring you some George Mason goodies today.
Bet.
Starting off, what's going on with this Robinson construction right now?
What Robinson construction? It seems like there is a building missing from campus now.
An entire building. And like, it's messing with everything.
Let me tell you something, Ryan. The amount of times... So, I don't know if you know, but do you know where David King is?
Yeah.
So, you know, we live in White Top. Oh, should we say that? I don't know if we should say that.
We live in White Top.
We live in White Top. So, my walk from White Top to David King is just a crap show. Because I have to walk through all the construction. So, say if I want to go past Fenwick, I then have to walk all the way almost directly towards the JC and then turn around and then go back towards David King.
Well, trying to get from anywhere to Southside is
I've just
impossible.
Given up. I've just given up, man. Like,
might as well go to the Globe now.
Yeah, because like you have to if you want to go to Southside, either you have to go down a Quiet Creek Lane, turn left, and then take the huge ramp on the right and then go all the way back up, or you have to go past Fenwick and do the same thing. And it's just, you know, horrendous.
Not only that, but not only the Robinson construction, but the construction with the old student apartment buildings going on down there, whatever they're doing down there. It's just grass and dirt right now. They haven't built anything.
There's like that huge mound of dirt there.
You're right.
I don't know what that's for.
Walking to and from the music building from White Top is... Yesterday it rained and it... The entire thing was muddy and I wear white shoes, which is probably my own fault.
Yeah, I wear gray shoes too, so like...
But yeah. There's mud all over the place. It's impossible to avoid it.
Yeah, it's just nothing good. I mean, I'm excited, you know, by the time we graduate, there's going to be nice new buildings.
Oh, good. Stuff that we won't be using.
I know. But, you know, they're going to be, you know, cool. We're going to have, I think Harris is going to be completely redone.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be that new walkway all the way to Southside. You know, it's going to be cool when everything's done, I think. But I don't know if it's worth our time right now.
I haven't noticed, but is the clock tower still there?
Or no, did the clock tower is now in storage.
Oh, it's gone.
So yeah, I think the class of 99's gift, George Mason, is currently in storage right now.
First the clock tower, then the George Mason statue. They're taking away our rights.
I think they are actually moving the George Mason statue. So
to where?
You know where the circle is right in front of the PAB?
Yeah?
They're getting rid of that.
Are they really?
Yeah, they're getting rid of the entire, like, drivable circle, and they're going to probably move the statue up, like, 20 feet.
Oh, so not really a big move.
Not, like, big move.
And and they'll keep him facing the same way, right?
I think so.
Because as the old story goes, George Mason is facing away from D.C. because he's opposed to George Washington or
it's
something
actually,
like that.
So, if you didn't know this, I was a Mason ambassador. I've been kind of inactive for the last couple of weeks, but...
Because you're lazy.
Because I'm doing other things, but we're told, George Mason faces away from the Washington Monument because mainly George Mason and Washington were not very good friends when they died, mainly because they disagreed a lot with the Bill of Rights, I think.
Nobody asked for a history lesson. Okay. You can just stop there.
Okay. Yeah. So he just, you know, they took it to the grave. It's very petty of both of them, and I applaud them for that. So
we got a good podcast coming towards you. We got a couple
for
plugs.
Sure.
We're going to talk about the Super Bowl. We are going to bring on a caller for men's basketball. I'll talk about our trip to RVA a little bit, and then we'll close it out with some women's basketball.
For sure.
If you're looking for something to do fun on February 15th, you can head down to Brian's Grill. My band, The New Vibe, is playing there. They're a neo-soul, jazz, funk, rap group. So
you're in a band?
I am in a band.
What do you play?
In this band I'm playing, I'll probably be playing keys and a little bit of trumpet. But you come out, it'll be a chill environment. Brian's is always a good time. Right next to campus, you can walk there.
Mm-hmm.
So come check that out.
I think we'll move on to the Super Bowl now, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Let me just say we were both wrong when it came to our predictions.
Very wrong.
Very wrong. You know, who would have expected the Rams to only score 3 points?
I was looking forward to watching the Rams defense, but the Patriots defense is the one that showed up.
Yep, that's true. Well, I think I even saw like one guy in Vegas. He bet like $200 that the Rams would only score 3 points the entire game, and he won like the odds were like 400 to 1, and he won like $100,000.
I have no idea how odds work. I've never bet in my life, but that's insane.
Yeah, it's just, you know, imagine putting down like $200 and coming back with 100 G's. It's insane.
So Tom Brady has to put another ring on his left hand now instead of his right. So what was your favorite Super Bowl commercial, Tom? There weren't a whole lot of memorable ones, but what was your favorite of those?
I don't know, man. I'm different, okay? So I don't watch for the commercials, unlike a lot of other people.
What?
I watch for the game. And this is why I don't really like
Super Bowl. Why not both?
I just don't find them enjoyable. Like, they spend all this money for these commercials that are subpar at best. Am I wrong?
Yeah, you're right. I mean,
how am I wrong?
Some of them were duds, but some of them were good ones.
Which one?
I mean, the Budweiser commercial with the dog getting his face blown by the wind was pretty cool.
I don't remember that one.
There was the robot one got a lot of...
The TurboTax
the
one?
The Turbo... It got
that one was so terrible.
I'm not saying it was good,
that
but
was
it...
was absolutely abhorrent.
It got a lot of attention because it was like one of the first ones. My favorite one, without a doubt, is the Pepsi commercial with Steve Carell and Cardi B. And the other guy, I don't know
that
who
one.
He was, the rapper.
I don't know about that one.
But it was just funny listening to Steve Carell and Cardi B interact, because those are two completely opposite people that you would never expect to see interact.
But yeah, I'm not a guy that usually watches the commercials. This is why
That's an American. That is an American.
Wow. But I don't usually go to Super Bowl parties.
I didn't either. I watched it.
Yeah,
with one other person.
You know, most of the time people are talking for the most of the time through the game, and that really makes me mad. And then they're like, "Oh, shh, you gotta be quiet. The commercials are on." I'm like, "Why are we watching this game? Huh?"
In better news, M&M's are coming out with a chocolate bar. So
are they really?
Yeah. If you had paid attention to the commercials, you would have known that, you idiot.
Wow. I mean, they upload them all onto YouTube, so, like, am I really missing anything?
I mean, fair. What about the halftime show? There was a lot
Disaster.
Of buzz around the halftime show.
Garbage.
Maroon 5.
Absolute garbage, man.
Maroon 5, big boy. And
oh, whoa. Travis Scott?
Travis Scott.
Travis
That's who I'm missing.
Scott.
Yeah, so...
Nice little...
you know, Maroon 5 played... At least they played their good music.
That's true.
They played their good music, and they slowed it down a little bit.
Adam Levine sounded pretty well.
What'd you think of Adam Levine's, you know, stripping?
I'm not personally a fan.
No, I would. I mean, I wouldn't think so.
No, no. But there are many girls very happy too.
Yeah, my sister texted me and said something along the lines of, "How do we cancel the game and get Adam Levine's shirt off for longer?"
Just put him on the Jumbotron for the rest of the game, I think.
What George Mason, specifically Green Machine people are upset about is the...
Well, not just Green Machine.
Well,
everyone.
The sweet victory tease.
That was... Oh, gosh.
I read that Nickelodeon, or whoever owns the rights to that song, remastered the whole song for the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And the executives ended up only using that teaser.
Is that true?
That is true.
I did not hear that.
It is true. Probably.
Wait, what? Is it true or is it not true?
Well, I don't remember where I read it, but I definitely read it.
Yeah, I heard that too. I heard that they like redid the entire animation. And
I'm just... Like, and then to go into sicko mode.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw my tweet. Did you see my tweet about it?
I don't remember it.
I said, sicko no, bring back sweet victory.
Oh, very clever.
Yeah, I know.
Very clever.
That's that Italian-American brain right there.
Oh, my God. Had you heard of Little Boy?
No,
or no, Big Boy. Big Boy.
Is it Big Boy?
Big Boy.
It is Big Boy.
Yeah.
I had never heard of Big Boy. I'm not that into rap. I listen to a little bit of rap. Right. But I've never heard of Big Boy before.
No,
I've heard
I don't.
Of Travis Scott.
I don't need to listen to Big Boy again.
No.
I don't think.
No, me neither. You know, he came in on that car. You see him coming.
Yeah,
in the car.
That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
What was up with the meteor that Travis Scott came in on?
I don't know what was up with that. He was just on fire the whole time, and then.
Well, because it was like CGI, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. No one could see
so
that.
So what did the people in the stadium see?
They
is
see
what
nothing.
I'm. That's what I'm curious
they
about.
They see nothing.
They got gypped.
Yeah, I don't. I think that's why it's, you know, I think maybe cooler to watch it from home on a TV.
Oh, well, I mean, maybe once in your lifetime going to the Super Bowl sounds like a good time. It would be loud. It would be expensive. It might have been a joke. I didn't really pay attention to it that much, but I heard that a hot dog and a soda at the Super Bowl cost $110.
No way. I had to hold myself there.
But like,
no way.
It was probably an exaggeration, but imagine how much they probably charge for food and drinks at the Super Bowl.
It's got to be, abhorrent. Like, probably like, I don't know, a hot dog is like $10.
At least.
And then a drink.
I mean,
like
if you're getting
drink.
Chicken tenders and fries at the at the Eagle Bank, that's $10.
Yeah. Super Bowl chicken and fries, probably
25 at least.
20, 25. Yeah, that's insane.
You might as well. People are there. People are going to buy the food there. You might as well charge whatever you
and
want.
These people have paid almost thousands of dollars for their tickets. So who do you think, you know, they're going to definitely be paying lots of money for food as well.
Mm. What'd you think about the MVP pick? Do you agree with it?
I think so.
Of Julian Edelman.
Julian Edelman. I think he deserved that. You know, he had, I think, over... he had over 100 yards receiving, mm-hmm. and you know, he came up in those clutch moments.
I was really hoping that the Rams would somehow pull it off, and then they would have to give the MVP to the punter.
Oh, that's right, Johnny Hecker.
Johnny Hecker. I think that would have been.
Yes.
I think he would have had to. He punted 8 or 9 times,
yeah.
or something like that.
It was
that.
Like a Super Bowl record for most consecutive punts.
And he also had the Super Bowl record for the longest punt.
Yes, that's true. I think it was like 63 yards. 63-yard punt.
Yeah.
That's insane.
That would have been really cool to be able to give the MVP to the kicker. Probably wouldn't have worked out
that
way.
I saw a meme of like Johnny Hecker on like his phone somewhere. And like he's like Googling, has a punter ever won the Super Bowl MVP? And, you know, I was hoping for them to score and tie things back up mm-hmm. before that last field goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, maybe see Johnny Hecker actually get an MVP. Because, you know, I've said this before, I'm a big Pat McAfee fan. And I'm always hashtag for the brand. Hashtag for the brand is the correct term. And punters everywhere are people, too.
I think what we're all glad about is that Tom Brady didn't win another MVP.
That is
he
true.
He did win his 6th Super Bowl, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
For Tom Brady, I guess.
Yeah.
But it puts him in the discussion of, you know, is he the greatest football player of all time?
Mm-hmm.
And let's say he is.
Okay.
But Dom, you found this graphic. Why don't you talk about it?
I was on Twitter and I found this graphic, I think, by NBC, and it said, rank these goats. And on this list, they had Mr. TB12, Tom Brady. They had Mr. MJ, Michael Jordan. They have Muhammad Ali. They had Jack Nicklaus and Mr. Wayne Gretzky, my favorite out of all of them. And
don't spoil it.
Who says I'm going to pick him first?
I don't know. You said you liked him the most.
Yeah. Doesn't mean he's the best of all time.
Anyway, all right, let's rank these bad boys.
Okay.
So who do you have in the 5 spot?
The 5 spot. I'm going to put Jack Nicklaus.
I have to agree. Not because he's bad. He might be better than all of this,
mm-hmm.
but it's golf. Like, I know there are probably some golf fans out there, but it doesn't really require any athletic ability.
Hey, you're talking to a former golfer here.
I mean, you got to swing and you got to have, like, hand-eye coordination, I guess. But, like... You're not getting hit or punched or slapped or anything like that.
It's mostly just, I'd say it's just skill and not necessarily.
Yeah. So
there's no teamwork involved.
He's legendary, but like, nah. All right. I agree. I put him in the 6 spot. What about the 5 spot?
The 4 spot? You
mean? The 4 spot. There's only 4. Sorry.
I would say Tom Brady.
Why is that? With 6 Super Bowl rings, he's in the, he doesn't
in the
even
four
get
spot.
In the top 3?
Nope. Not at all.
Why?
Muhammad Ali, I think, only lost like three times. Wayne Gretzky, record for most points, most goals, most assists. Not most cups, but he did win, I think, five cups. And Michael Jordan, six rings. So I'm going to say that too. So TB12, you know, maybe the greatest of all time for football. But I'm going to put him in the four spot.
I'm going to disagree with you on that. I'm going to put Wayne Gretzky in the four spot.
Oh, wrong choice.
I know you're going to be mad at me for it, but...
Wrong choice.
I mean, Wayne Gretzky is like... He's good, but... He's maybe the face of hockey, but... He's not, like, really a household name. Like...
Oh, you want to go to Canada?
I mean, probably you in Canada he is, because hockey is their national sport. But
yeah.
Even if you're not a football fan, you know who Tom Brady is. You know who Michael Jordan is. You know who Muhammad Ali is. If you don't watch or have never paid attention to hockey, you don't know who Wayne Gretzky is.
I disagree.
I mean, I bet if I texted my sister right now,
go ahead,
she would know who Wayne Gretzky is.
Go text her. I want you to text her right now.
All right, I'll text her. Who do you have in the three spot?
Three spot. I'm gonna put. I'm going to put Wayne Gretzky.
You just put him. Oh, you put him. Oh, you're putting him in the three spot.
Yeah, I'm going to put him in the three spot.
Okay. And I'll flip-flop with that, and I'm going to put Tom Brady in the three spot.
Okay. Is there any reason behind that?
I mean, he's obviously a smart player. He knows who to play for.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he keeps winning with the Patriots. He was drafted by the Patriots, and he hasn't moved from the Patriots. So he's smart there. He knows how to run. He knows probably how to run an offense. He knows how to read the defense. Do I think he is the sole reason for these six championships? No.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he's legendary. And yeah. He is a household name.
Yeah. Who do you have as your two spot?
This is tough. The one problem... And that is objectively true about both of us, is neither of us were around really to be able to watch Michael Jordan and Muhammad Ali.
No.
So this is kind of skewed. This is just based off of what we've seen, highlights-wise, what we've heard. I'm going to put Muhammad Ali in the two spot.
I'm going to disagree again.
You're going to disagree.
Yeah, I'm going to say Muhammad Ali as my first spot and put Michael Jordan as my second spot.
For the record, my sister does not know who Wayne Gretzky is.
I'm disappointed in your sister. I think it's just the Omaha blood.
That's baloney.
Nope, it's just because there's no hockey team out there.
There is.
Get yourself a hockey team.
Hey, our UNO, University of Nebraska Omaha, was in the Ice Four, what do you call it?
Final Four.
The Final
the
Four.
Frozen Four, excuse
the
me.
Frozen Four, like frozen two four. Years ago. So we know hockey. We know,
but you don't know NHL hockey.
Well, no, but I mean,
you need to get yourself a hockey team.
We
a Nebraskan also hockey team.
We had the curling Olympic tryouts.
But Wayne Gretzky's not a curler.
I'm just saying it's a Canadian sport. So you're putting.
But I'm putting Muhammad Ali in my first spot and putting Michael Jordan as my second spot.
What reason?
I pulled it up and Muhammad Ali, had 61 total fights. He won 56 of them. And he won 37 of them by knockout, which is just complete dominance if you didn't know. Like, you do not win 37 fights out of more than half of your fights by knockout. That's just unheard of.
Mm.
That's greatest of all time, I think, in my mind. And then Michael Jordan, you know, I think it'd go either way between the two, but... I'd put him at my two spot. You know, he had the six rings and, you know, played really well, I guess, during his career. But I think if he had been playing now, I think it might be a little different, but I'd still put him at my two spot.
Here's the reason I'm going to put Michael Jordan ahead of Muhammad Ali.
Okay.
It's not because either one is more athletic than the other. It's not because either one has more wins than the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply the fact that basketball is a more watched sport than boxing. And
it's true.
And so Michael Jordan is, you know, he is the face of basketball. Okay. Number 23, the Bulls. They are the face of basketball. If you ask anybody, you know, name the most famous basketball player of all time, they're probably going to say Michael Jordan.
Okay.
And I think that that is the reason why he's the GOAT, is because he was able to be the face of such a wide, diverse, you know, sports association.
Okay.
So that's what I got there.
Yeah, so let's see.
Go ahead and tweet us.
Tweet by George. Just
cut this right here and we can. Tweet by George, which of the five are your favorite? How would you rank the GOATs?
Yeah. To go back around, I have Muhammad Ali, Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, TB12, and Jack Nicklaus. And then, Ryan, how about you repeat yours, too?
I had Jack Nicklaus at the five spot, then Wayne Gretzky, Tom Brady, Muhammad Ali, and to top it off, Michael Jordan.
So, you know, leave us your rankings and tweet them us by George. And we'll move on to our next segment. I think it's going to be a nice reoccurring segment for Ryan. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, Ryan?
This is going to be a nice break kind of in between campus life talk, sports talk. I just want to talk about kind of the song of the week, the song that I'm listening to, the song that I'm really vibing with this week. And so we'll do this every week and give the song a listen. Tell me if you like it. Give me some song suggestions you want me to put on here. Whatever works. But the song of the week this week is a song called Elephant in the Room by Chris Thiele. Okay. Thiele is spelled T-H-I-L-E.
That's an odd spelling.
It is. It is a strange spelling, but I swear that's how you say it.
It looks like Thiel.
Thiel or Thiel.
Yeah.
It's on their album, Thanks for Listening, which came out in 2017. They have a couple other albums out. You can check it out. Chris Thiele is one of the world's best mandolin players.
Oh, my God.
And a mandolin is, it's like a guitar. It sounds like a guitar. But in what makes it different is there are two of each notes. So there are two G strings, two D strings, two A strings.
Is there any reason behind that?
It just gives it a little bit different of a timbre and a little bit different of a color, you know, than a guitar. A little brighter. It sounds a little more Eastern music. It's got like an Eastern music quality to it, but it's not just it's a real song, like a kind of a pop song or an indie song, but it's not just mandolin music. But it's a great song, and they reference Chicago, the Chicago Cubs.
Oh,
if you want to check that out, so
okay.
Go ahead and check that out.
I think we're going to transition now to our men's basketball segment. We're going to bring on Tyler Byram, who's a contributor here at GME Giant Killer. And we're going to – here's the interview. Welcome back to the Ryan and Domcast. We brought on a nice, very special guest, first-timer. We got Tyler Byram. He's one of our writers here at GMU Giant Killer. He's going to help us break down the last two games of men's basketball. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Always a good day to talk about George Mason basketball.
Yeah. Let's just get right into it. You know, a lot of us, the GK team, went down to Richmond to go see that VCU game. You know, we didn't come out with the win, but what do you think we can, you know, come out with this loss? What can we learn from this loss? What do you think, Tyler?
Well, I mean, going to VCU, it's never an easy place to go and get a victory. You have to go. You basically have to be playing at your best point on the entire season. You maybe probably going to even have to catch VCU off guard a little bit. And you're also going to have to hope for some luck along the way. And for George Mason, I mean, you could see kind of the cracks a little bit in the foundation, just not in the team as a whole, but just on the run that they had been on. They got that big win over Dayton, but just when they played George Washington at home, you were kind of hoping that that game would be a little bit more one-sided than what it was.
Yeah.
With the Colonials being having a down year, rebuilding year, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
There were chances for Mason against VCU. I mean, if you look at VCU's performance, you would expect George Mason to be able to come away with that victory. But bottom line is Mason didn't show up well. Their guards were unable to shoot in that contest, and VCU just made it a pain in the butt for the guards to try and get the ball into the post.
This was one of the probably loudest arenas they'd played in all year. Do you think that played a pretty big part in the loss?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, like I said, VCU's never, the Siegel Center is never an easy place to play for any team. VCU, they always sell out, always have a loud and rambunctious crowd. You would think, though, with them playing at Dayton earlier this year in a game that on TV, it looked like it was a loud crowd as well. They always have good fans. They also sell out the arena a bunch of times. And you would think that that success would have translated a little bit, but it just didn't happen in this contest, which is odd because last year, George Mason, same kind of situation, except Mason's trying to make a run at the end of the year. They beat VCU on VCU's own floor.
Now, let's see. Mason had a chance going into that second half. I think they went on a nice little run there. They struggled in the first half, and then around the 10:40 mark, VCU just had like three straight daggers of three-pointers, and that just didn't help at all. You know, Jared Reuter and Jordan Miller, they both played well. A.J. Wilson was also missing for the longest time. You know, how do you think Jared and Jordan can step up, I guess, in these last couple conference games in the season?
Well, I think those guys are playing fantastic basketball right now. I mean, if you look at the VCU game, if you look at all of the forwards, Reuter, Greg Calixt, and Jordan Miller, who played in that game against VCU, combined they were 8-for-24 from the field, which is really good production for George Mason, something they haven't seen since Siobhan Thompson was on the team. So those three guys played really well. Every time they got the ball, there weren't many mistakes. There aren't many turnovers from the guys. The problem was in that VCU game in particular was the guards. Otis Livingston II, Justin Kyer, Javon Green, they only combined for 17 points. And in a guard-heavy league, you need your guards to be able to perform night in and night out. Still, with that being said, I think George Mason could have been able to gut out that victory. But at the same time, you mentioned about the 10-minute mark. That's also when Dave Paulson decided to go to a forward-guard lineup for a majority of the rest of the way. Really just kept trying to jack up three-pointers to try and cut into that VCU. They went away what was working well and actually had climbed them back in from what was a significant deficit in the first half of that ball game.
One of the problems that I saw arise is we weren't finishing at the basket. We went about 16-for-27 for layups. That's like 11 missed layups. Multiple times we could have tied the game with offensive rebounds, but we just couldn't finish at the hoop. What's going on there, do you think?
Yeah, well, this team isn't built to offensive rebound. I think the best offensive rebounder on the team, Jaya Greer, of course, has been MIA since November at this point. Jared Reuter isn't a typical strong rebounding forward. A lot of people knew this coming into this season. And besides that, the next best offensive rebounder is probably A.J. Wilson, which is a whole different discussion. But just the offensive rebound, you can't – in the past couple of years when Mason's kind of gotten used to it, used to that production from Marquise Moore, used to from the good production from basically the whole team as a whole, really balanced offensive rebounding team. I think with them having a little bit stronger forward depth, the team isn't emphasizing that as much from the team collectively. And maybe that's the reason why offensive rebounds aren't going the way of the Patriots. But you're right. At the rim, many of the guys didn't finish, especially Otis Livingston and Justin Kyer. Those were two guys that were really trying to get involved in the game. And by doing so, when you're a player that hasn't been able to hit your jump shot, find your spots on the court, you just try and drive to the basket, get some fouls, get some easy shots to go in to find your groove, and those guys were just unable to do so.
Jamal Hartwell was also out. He, I think, sprained his knee. How do you think that affected Otis when it came to play time?
Oh, it definitely has affected Otis Livingston II. One thing that I'm trying to work up on is this team, back before their JMU game, Dave Paulson talked about the team kind of running a little bit of a boot camp in that long break before they played Navy on December 21st. And he said they've been kind of keeping up that intensity ever since. Having a boot camp style of practicing where you don't have a game for 2 weeks and then you have games once every 3-4 days, it starts to add up on a team that has experience, and the experienced guys have been playing for all four seasons. I mean, Otis Livingston II, he's been averaging over 33 minutes a game before in each season, back all the way to his freshman year, and that's not dipping down at all this season. These guys are tired. They have a long way to go, and if you look at the rotation for Mason right now, especially with A.J. Wilson not playing and JDS, Jason Douglas Stanley, not getting many minutes, there's only about a seven-man rotation, and if you look at them, there's only four guards. Yes. So when you have three guards out on the court at all times and only one bench substitute, a lot of those guys are going to be playing for basically the entire contest. And when Paulson likes to throw out his four-guard lineups, then there's no bench help from the guard position. So those guys get in a long run. It's either going to force Paulson to call a timeout to maybe get those guys some rest, or those guys are just going to have to dig deep and gut it out.
You mentioned AJ earlier, and he finally got in the Richmond game after a couple games off. What do you think? Do you have any ideas what was going on there with him not playing the last couple games?
I don't want to go in too deep into that. I mean, it's obviously a team decision. It is a little bit strange because there are times where I definitely think AJ can help this team. I do agree with maybe his position on the depth chart with how it goes and how the offense is rolling for Dave Paulson, but when they want to go into a quick transition type of teams, popping some threes and trying to come back into contest when the games might seem out of hand, I mean, there's a claim to be putting AJ in. He is a little bit of a liability defensively in certain aspects.
Yeah.
But I think in close games when teams are going to be trying to drive to the basket and get some contact, just throw him in there, and he's a great guy to have out in transition and just provide a spark for the team. That's what he describes his role to be, is to get the bench going, get his teammates going in key moments. And he can't really do that when he's getting less than 5 minutes of contest.
Now, I want to move a little on to the Richmond game. Paulson, you know, that outcome was not what we wanted at all. You know, Paulson said we ran into a buzzsaw. You know, we could say we played one of our worst games of the year, in my opinion. And, you know, I guess Richmond just showed up as well. How do you think that affects the team, I guess, throughout the rest of the conference play?
It will probably help. It will go one of two different ways. It's either going to be a wake-up call for this team, being like, hey, we aren't the hot shots that we thought we were running at the top of the conference, or it's going to be like, as I saw you guys were kind of alluding to earlier, was could this be the demise of the team going forward, which I don't think that's going to be the case. I do think that there is some middle ground between what we saw in the first half of conference play for George Mason and what we saw during the non-conference play for be a little this team is actually somewhere in between that. Now it's which way does they skew? Do they skew towards the higher results, or do they skew towards some of those unquestionable losses where just things aren't going the way for the Patriots? But, yeah, that Richmond game, again, I think a lot of it goes to they were tired. That isn't an easy stretch that they had because they drove down to VCU on Saturday night. I believe they stayed – or, no, they drove down to VCU on Saturday. I believe they drove back on Sunday. Then they have class Monday, Tuesday, have to go back down to Richmond again on Wednesday to the same city. It was just – it was a really tough stretch for the guys. I think they'll enjoy being back home. I think that they're, because they have a two-game homestand coming up and two winnable games for them. And I just think that for everyone involved, that they realized that they need to take another step forward. They were playing well. They relied on their experience from last year to be able to play at a high level and get a good start in conference play. Now it's the time, as the other teams are getting better, you also have to get better to stay with those teams.
Yeah. Jordan Miller arguably played the best in that Richmond game. As just a freshman, how excited are you to have him on this team for another 3 years?
Well, yeah, Jordan Miller, he's going to be a fantastic player for George Mason. I think with his performance really jumps up in the depth chart and may have Dave Paulson thinking how next year is going to go for his team. While both these past few games were in losses, he's really stepped up for George Mason. He's shooting 13 for 17, 76%, and they aren't all gimme baskets Gimme baskets up at the rim. He's able to shoot. He's able to get some good shots off. He reads the offense well. He really understands the offense, and he's competent, which is something that you don't typically see from freshmen. We've been able at George Mason to be fortunate to get some competent freshmen. I mean, there's Otis's freshman year, Jair's freshman year, Gonar's freshman year a year ago. Mm-hmm. All these guys coming in as competent freshmen, and I think it's really helping provide a little bit of the spark for the team. I think, though, one thing that he needs to work on is defensively. He needs to be a little bit more consistent, but on the offensive end, especially in the forward spot where there's been some question marks this season, he's helped provide a spark, and it really forces the defense against George Mason to kind of spread out and cover guys more honestly.
Tyler, do you think we still have a chance to, you know, at least finish, you know, first or second in the A-10 tournament?
I think they will, especially if they're able to. Oh, I think they will have a chance. Let me just say that. They will have a chance. I'm not going to say that they will finish top two in the conference, but they have been put through the ringer as of late. And if they can turn it around, especially against LaSalle and especially against UMass, and get two wins, then I'm more convinced that they will be able to have a good tournament performance. I think the big thing now for George Mason, I know a lot of people were hoping for an Atlantic 10 title this year, especially in the regular season, but I think right now they should just strive to be one of those top four teams and get that double bye into the quarterfinals. It would be really beneficial for this team. It really makes your schedule a whole lot easier, and you can rely on some upsets from all these top teams that give you struggles. They only have two remaining games left from the current top five as we speak, with, of course, Mason being in third place, and that's at home against VCU and at St. Louis. So if Mason can win at least one of those while the rest of the other teams that Mason's competing with are going to be playing each other a whole lot more, I like Mason's odds to be able to get in a favorable spot in the tournament.
That is Tyler Byram. He's our one of our contributors here at DMU Giant Killer. Tyler, do you want to plug any of your social medias?
If you guys want to follow me on Twitter, it's at the Tyler Byram. I have content every single game day for George Mason, also other teams in the DMV area as well.
Perfect. That's Tyler Byram, and this is the Ryan and Domcast. Tyler Byram is a contributor for GMU Giant Killer. We're going to get back into the podcast to talk to you a little about our trip down to RVA. Yeah, Ryan.
This was my first time down to Richmond. Had you been to Richmond before?
I had not. It was, you know, an enlightening experience for me. So it was nice to go and finally see VCU for what it is when I, you know, I applied there when I was in high school.
And a little bit of a disclaimer. We didn't really get to explore Richmond that much. We were really just on the strip where the stadium is. Mm-hmm. We walked around a little bit, but the first thing that strikes me with Richmond is all the street murals.
Oh yeah,
like almost every building has a mural on it.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. You know, very colorful. Different, you know, like aliens and stuff. It's like out of this world.
It's very interesting. Cool. Yeah, so we took the trip down. It's about from George Mason. It's about an hour 45 minutes to 2 hours, right on the dot there, depending on how fast you go or if you stop anywhere. Mm-hmm. But we got there right around 3:30, 4 o'clock, and we went and our first stop was a dinner, and we went to a little pizza place called Pies and Pints.
It was pretty good.
Definitely a place to revisit once you turn 21.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We met up with the rest of the GK crew, with Chris and David, who runs the website, and we met up with the Richmond, Virginia Alumni Association for Mason, so that was pretty good, too. You know,
unaware that they were going to be there.
I didn't know that either. None of the GK crew knew though. But you know, they had great pizzas. We both shared a, what was it? Sausage and capicola pizza. Mm-hmm. It was pretty good. And then Ibrahim got a grape pizza, which I thought was interesting.
I had never seen grapes on a pizza before.
Me neither.
If you are of age, they do have a pretty funky beer. I was surprised by it. It's called the 420 brew or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's chemically created, so you're supposed to be able to smell weed when you drink it.
It's nobody could smell the weed from it.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was. You know.
Apparently, it was still good though.
Yeah. I wouldn't know because I didn't try it, but apparently it still tasted good. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about the Peppas. I think we have a new little segment here.
Another segment that I want to introduce. Anytime Dom or I go to an away game, I'm going to do a segment called Are Bands Better? Which will be a completely unbiased opinion of the...
Totally unbiased.
Totally, completely unbiased of the opposing team's band. So today is Our Band's Better, the Peppas edition.
Okay. Let's kick this one off.
So we walk into the stadium and just a wall of sound.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the problem.
Yeah.
Is if it was just a lot of sound. There was not a whole lot of distinction. Mm-hmm. They did... When we walked in, one of the first songs they played was Africa by Toto, and yeah. I want to say that was the best song they played the entire night.
I would agree with you.
Which is too bad, but it had the most definition.
Mm-hmm.
And the craziest part about this is the band was loud. There was no definition. You couldn't really hear the melody for a lot of the songs, but they mic their trumpets.
You know, if y'all don't know, if you mic your trumpets, that's a really big problem because that shows that your trumpets can't project farther than... I don't know, 20 feet.
Yeah, I mean, the George Mason doesn't mic their the Green Machine doesn't mic their trumpets, and you can hear us from across the stadium.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just something. The other thing that I noticed is multiple times they were dangerously close to playing during the game, like during gameplay, which can result in a technical foul on the VCU squad.
Yeah.
And so I was just interested that they weren't more careful with that. We're super careful about not playing during gameplay.
So. I found that their director, I don't know his name because the other one left, but he just had his back to the game the whole time. He wasn't really paying attention, which is probably why they were sometimes so close to playing during the game. And, you know, they had, I think, also one rapper there. He was decent at the best.
Yeah. I'd say so. A tip for anyone out there who is running or ever plans to run a pep band. Adele is not pep band music, no matter how fast you play it. The Peppas decided to play Rolling in the Deep by Adele, and no matter how fast you play that song, it's just not going to work with a pep band song. Yeah. They also completely skewed my opinion of them when they turned into white frat boys and started playing Mo Bamba. So that was something. But one of the funniest memories from this night is on the way back, I actually got in a little bit of a Twitter argument with some dude from VCU. And he was a graduate, but...
Let me see if I can find the dude's name.
Well, I looked back today and all his posts were deleted. So he obviously... he obviously gave up, but let me give you a little rundown of how this went. Somebody tweeted about somebody from George Mason, somebody who had watched the game from home, had tweeted that our band was better, the Green Machine was better, and some idiot decided to try and get in a Twitter argument about how our cheesy version of Living on a Prayer doesn't get national attention.
It ain't no cheesy version.
It's
by
not
the way.
Cheesy.
No.
It's great. It's not
a great,
it's
great arrangement.
And so I tweet back at him because I gotta, you know, you gotta put some respect on the name of the Green Machine.
Put some respect.
That's right. And so I tweet back at him and I say, peep our viral Rage Against the Machine video, buddy, which is on YouTube and has like 800,000, almost a million views.
Pretty sure.
And that's from like, maybe it does. Yeah. And that's from like a while ago. And we've gotten cooler, to be completely honest with you. And he goes, blah, blah, blah. That's just internet viral. We've been on the Today Show and we've been all over these places on ESPN and blah, blah,
every
blah, blah,
broadcasting
blah.
Network.
Yeah. And I was like, and so I was very nice to him.
Yeah.
And the only thing I sent back was the Bleacher Report.
Well, he first said, take that L.
Oh, he said, take that L. It's completely disrespectful. Keep in mind, he knows, he can see that I'm like a 20-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And this guy's like at least 30, 35 fighting with
goofy,
me.
Goofy outfit.
Yeah. And so, he take that L. And so I say, I give him the Bleacher Report article where it posts George Mason as the number one pep band in the nation and VCU as number two.
Yep.
and all I send him is the questioning emoji back.
With like your hand in like that L shape.
Exactly.
Stroking like your beard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't respond to it, and I look back at it today, and he's deleted his tweets from it. So
and
I think
he knows.
I think
he
I knows. Made him feel bad. I think I made him feel bad.
I think he just knows that, you know. The Peppas can't compare it to us
anymore. So in conclusion, our band's better.
Yep,
thank you.
Yep. Okay, I think it's time for us to finish off this pod with a little women's basketball.
I wasn't able to make the St. Bonaventure game. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, Dom?
Well, you see, Bonaventure beat us 64-55. Let's see, when was that? On Sunday. And that just wasn't a good loss at all. I think Nyla Millison even said that. She had nothing to say. She was just so speechless, which is, like, not her at all. But, you know, then they played GW at home here, and their coach was pissed for pretty much the entire game. Her name is Jen. I don't know if I'm saying this. Rosati?
Can we just talk about how Nicole outscored their entire team in the first half and for most of the second half?
I'm pretty sure. I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I said, like, Nicole Cardano-Hillary, 25 points. GW, like, 22 points. And I said, like, holy cow. Like, what the heck? And that's just, like, mind-blowing to me. Like, how can one player just, like, outscore an entire team
for
the first half?
The kind of player who has 1,000 points halfway through her sophomore
that's
year.
That's true. So she outscored them in the first half. She was 4-for-5 from beyond the arc, which is, you know, great for her. In the fourth quarter, she converted 4 steals for 4 layups. 2 of those came from herself, and then 1 from Rick Corpinen and 1 from J.C. Bolton. I think this was her first, her best shooting night since the first game of the season. She went 5-for-8 from behind the arc to finish this game out. It was her best since the 4-from-6 Eastern Kentucky University her freshman year. She had 9 rebounds. She was so close to getting a double-double, and then Nyla took her out for the rest of the game. And I guess she just wasn't aware that she had 9 rebounds. So I'm pretty sure she could have gotten a double-double if she had the chance. But, you know, oh well about that. But also, I think Allie McCool really stepped up in this one. You know, Camry got into foul trouble really quickly. She had 5 fouls in 12 minutes, which is just unlike her.
Mm-hmm.
Allie, for JC, she had quite the impact. She had 6 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists in her 38 minutes. She's playing really well. You know,
I mean, she's playing 38 minutes. That's just a testament to how well she's playing and how much the coach trusts her.
Yeah. She leads the team, actually, with 36 minutes per game, which is, you know, pretty good. Let's see. Their upcoming schedule, however, is quite the disaster, I'm pretty sure, minus the basement dweller LaSalle twice in the next 7 games. But they have to play 3 of the 4 top teams in the A-10 in their last 7 games, which, ouch.
It's a tough road ahead, so we really got to bounce off this GW win and into something good for us to really get into shape here.
Yeah. I think right now we're still hosting that first game in March on that one Tuesday. I think we're in the 8th spot right now, I want to say. We'll be hosting on that Tuesday. And then we'll play those 3 of the 4 top teams in the last 7 games, and with Fordham and VCU in the top 2 of the next 3 games. This is a pivotal point for Mason and the stretch, you know, especially going into Pittsburgh.
I think one thing that we can talk about from the GW game is, you know, it was the National Girls and Women's Day in Sports, something like
National
that.
National Girls and Women in Sports Day.
National Girls and Women in Sports Day.
Is it on the back of your phone?
No, the hashtag is #NGWSD is on the back of my phone.
Yeah.
But it was a great crowd for a women's game. You know, we had, I think athletics had invited most of the sororities on campus and all of the
women's sports teams,
all
too.
Of the women's sports clubs teams and regular teams on campus. So it was a great environment for a women's game. It was really exciting getting to see that many people come out for a women's game.
It's I think they had like, I don't know, 1,400 people.
Yeah, that's
which is just great, I'd say.
The student section opposite the green machine was nearly full.
Yeah, I was surprised. You know, they showed up, the G-Force showed up, and I was just glad to see that all those people came. Their sororities, gotta give it to them. You know, they showed up in droves, you know, lots of people. All the other games last year, I think it passed that record as well. It's been a while since they've had 1,400 people for the one game. This is the Ryan and Dom cast. You can catch us every Friday. Just be on the lookout on the By George Twitter and iTunes. We'll drop in those episodes every Saturday, record every Friday. If you're at a student organization looking to get some little promotion, feel free to reach out to us. We'll be happy to shout you all out on the podcast. Feel free to give us some questions, too. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Follow the guys on Twitter at Ryan_Salek and at Dominic Allegra. The Ryan and Dom cast, brought to you by GMU Giant Killer, your place for all things George Mason basketball.